see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the third hour of the most thrilling 3 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting on the vinnieeastwoodshow.com. It's a listener-supported broadcast with listener-suggested guests and also some guests who introduce themselves to me and just want to come on the show and tell their stories. If you support that kind of new media development, then please go to the vinnieeastwoodshow.com, start up an automatic payment, either through the PayPal, preferably the Kiwi Bank, because PayPal always takes a percentage. And my very special guest today is still Atlantis Rose in studio. Welcome back, Rose. We were just talking over the break about some about gang affiliation with these well, shall we say, plutocrats of officialdom. The child services.
New Zealand's mafia.
Would you be willing to relay that story that you told me out on the deck?
Okay. We'll roll forward about 3 years while I'm going through oncology, the family court system. I found out that my partner's threats that my cancer would not be considered in family court. Your immune system goes down, you can't fight the disease. Roll forward to them tossing me out on the street with nowhere to live. In the Hegelian dialectic. That's a real tongue twister. Hegelian dialectic was performed on me, where the situation was so critical and in crisis, one of the family members was able to ride in on her white horse and get me a state house. She'd thrown me a lifeline. I trusted this woman. She had me in isolation for 3 years in the state house, promising to go to her peer group, Commissioner for Children, Beth Wood, head of UNICEF, all these big names. Some of them I met, but I had no idea she was trotting them off to the VIP tent and saying, marry woman, methamphetamine, lost your child, got her a state house. You know, they had no idea I was her, my child was her great niece. They couldn't connect the surnames. Anyway, roll forward to the state house she is, where I'm isolated. There's always a promise of getting the situation resolved for my child. I start working for the Every Child Counts campaign under her. I can prove that. I've got documentation to prove that. I totally am trusting this woman because she had me isolated one-on-one. I didn't actually see her personality disorders in social circumstances for like 3 years. Otherwise, I would have latched on a lot quicker that there was something really wrong there. You know, these psychopathic individuals are always very deceptive. So, and she did do so much work for the children that I idolised her, and so did my child. My child trusted her too. So anyway, roll forward. The third year of me being under house arrest, which was actually what it was, every time there was a crisis with my child or my ex-partner or threats from their family, I'd ring her and there'd be a promise, but she was busy with the UN and she'd get back to me, you know, all this sort of stuff. About the third year, I was interviewing for corporate jobs, getting offered jobs and then getting strange rebuttals. Later on, I find out there's a separate report saying I'm dangerous. It's being bandied about to potential employers. So during the third year of my state house years, I started to get quite despondent, very depressed. The cancer was spreading, failed promises. Around about the end of 2007, I go back to the mental health unit to advocate for children under Every Child Counts campaign. Friend of a friend of mine had an episode, was put in the unit. His children were anxious, having panic attacks. They did not know where daddy was for 2 weeks. I went in under Every Child Counts to advocate to the doctors. These children need to see their father on weekend leave to take their anxiety levels down, right? I go into the unit. I haven't been in there since I was in there. I had been cleared and tested in family court by a professor, had cleared me as not dangerous. Little did I know he'd written a separate report for this family to bandy about to stop me getting a job. I'm in this unit. There's lawyers everywhere. I'm an advocate for children. I have the professor come out. He's been very hostile to me, which I find very strange because I've only ever met him once in a suit and tie, clean shaven. He looked feral. He was hostile, body language, the whole thing. I ring up the higher up in my partner's family. She said, well, look, he'll just be annoyed that you're on his turf. Every child counts. Don't worry about it. The woman's still there wailing with the blinding headaches. She tells me that this particular professional, this professor, had put her down and called her a weirdo. So I started to see the other side of something that I wasn't quite sure of. I'm going in and out of the unit, advocating for these children. I'm back at the state house. I get a call from the higher-up in my family. She tells me to leave the property for the weekend and go to my partner's apartment because the grandfather who offended against my child is going to try and break into my house and I'm in danger, right? I'm in panic. You know, it's very easy with post-traumatic stress disorder for people like this who you trust to panic you. You actually think that they're working in your best interests and then later on you find out that they were actually working for the offenders, right? So I'm at my state house, in and out of the unit, in and out advocating. It's midday. Gang members come to my door. I open the door. There's a very large Maori man standing on my doorstep. Now, normally this time of year, you get Housing New Zealand workers come around and check your fire alarms and water blast your house if it needs to after winter. I knew this man was not Housing New Zealand. I had an instinctual feeling straight away, I do not want you in my house. So I stepped nose to nose into his personal space on the landing, which immediately made him step away. He went down the stairs. I went down the stairs after him, landed on the lawn, looked up onto my roof, and there was a young Maori man with a baton, a very large wooden baton, swinging it from my roof, looking at me in a menacing way. I looked at him and I said, look, there's a bird nest. You need to check. There's a bird nest in the gutter spattering. There's a bird flies over my bedroom every morning. And then I looked at the large Maori man. I said, there's a wasp's nest over there that needs to be looked at. Please let me know when you're finished. Walked back up my stairs. He followed me, the large Maori man. Turned around and he said, if it's really nice down here, darling, on a Friday night, all the lads will be down to party with you. So this was a direct threat to gang rape me, okay? I looked at him, slammed the door in his face, locked the door, turned my stereo system up full throttle to alert the cul-de-sac, the neighbours in the state housing area. Got my vacuum out, and about 10 minutes later, these individuals, who were obviously mob gang members, asked me to shut my window, and they sprayed the apex of my house with water. It was not a water blaster. The truck did not have a Housing New Zealand logo on it. And then they left. That night I rang up the higher up who I was working for in this family. She's very au fait with Maoridom. I am not. My father basically brought us up what in New Zealand is known as white Maoris, Western, no knowledge. I rang her up because she's affiliated from high up Maori dignitaries down to the Mungo mob. Her children's organisation looks after the Mungo mob children in the school holidays. I've actually been to her organisation and assisted in looking after these children. What we call the Wild Wild West in New Zealand, which is the East Cape, it's like, you know, the boondocks, the backwater, where it's, that's where all the problems are. So I rang her up and I said, what was going on there? Is that some sort of Maori voodoo ritual? And she said, I don't know, Karen, I'll have to get back to you, you know. So here I was being intimidated. I left, I took her, after this incident, she rang me and said, quick, get over to your ex-partner's apartment, you're in danger. Go for the weekend and do not return to your state house until I tell you that it's all clear. I did this. By this time, I had a lot of anxiety. You know, obviously, I didn't want to get gang raped. And, you know, I'm a cancer patient in a state house, very fragile at times. And so I went. And when I got back to my home, when she rang me in town and said it's all okay to go back, she made out that her brother-in-law, the offender against my child, was going to have some guys that was them that were going to rough me up. That's who had sent these ruffians. So get back to my cul-de-sac house. All the elderly neighbours are out. They're frightened out of their wits. They've had young Maori men driving up and down all weekend, ramming cars into fences, sitting in my garage drinking beer and doing drugs, rummaging through my belongings in the garage. They're absolutely terrified. I rang this woman again, reported in about what had gone on, and we both believed that they were looking for my baby videotapes, which have evidence of grooming games and whatnot on them. Now, I was later out to...
Sorry, grooming games?
Grooming games are... I've researched all this since. I'm not front-loaded with this information before my child disclosed, right? I researched afterwards. Grooming games are games that the pedophile ring, they set up at a very early age to... we're going to get into some really horrible topics here, so anybody that's delicate, you might want to turn this part off, but somebody needs to address this because it is going on. Now, mostly we hear about children being offended on 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. The ones that they say are rare, but I don't believe are rare at all, is they start on the child at about 2 in that they teach them to French kiss because there was exotic behaviour in nappies when my child was 2, where I said to my partner, "Have you noticed she's been trying to stick a tongue in your mouth?" And he went, "Yeah." I said, "It must be true what they say about soap operas. Children emulating what they see on soap operas on afternoon TV." I wasn't looking for this. Before this happened to me, I thought it was a very rare occurrence. So mainstream media put out this junk information so that you're not alerted as a parent to, you're thinking, "Oh, it must be watching Days of Our Lives, where she's got this, my 2-year-old has got this from." So once my child disclosed, I went and researched the internet and they said, "Did you see any exotic behaviour in nappies?" So at 2 years old, they're not able to actually fully abuse the child. They're setting the child up. They're saying, "This is what love is. This is what Nana and Papa do." Then the child is going, "Okay, I trust these people. I love my Nana and Papa. This is what love is," right? So you get a little bit further down the track when the child gets to about 3, which is a very important number in Freemasonry. Now, I've noted that the woman that I work for Every Child Counts was estranged from her family. She visited my daughter when she was 3 months old. Then at the 3-year-old mark, once they've done a year's grooming from 2 to 3 of, you know, exotic French kissing as the way you display your love and affection to the adult, right? Then what occurred was, because my child was picked up as possible development delay, I've got all these professionals coming at me at every angle, right? I'm dealing with speech therapists, early intervention, childhood team, fantastic team that was around me. So I'm very tuned in because my child's not communicating with me. My partner comes home every night from work between age 2 and 3, and I have video footage of him giving her, you know, dad gives your kid a horsey ride. Well, my dad just used to walk me around the room, right? We're talking about having my daughter on his back bronco bucking, and she's giggling because he's giving her a bronco buck ride. When I now go back and look at the tapes, he's encouraging her to crawl underneath his legs down to private areas. He's encouraging her to crawl over and sit with her legs draped over his neck, like he's just flopping and playing dead spider on the floor. She can crawl over. Now, in these tapes, when I look at myself, I'm doing stuff and you can see my body language. I'm like, what's going on? But she's laughing and she's enjoying because he's bucking her up and down and on his back and she's giggling. And then after a while, I went, "Now hang on a minute," because the younger brother-in-law comes around, gives her a horsey ride, a normal horsey ride, because the younger brother used to come around every day after high school. And I'm thinking, that's what my dad did with me. So that night when he religiously came home and had this playtime with my daughter, a lot of it's on videotape, I actually said to him, I said, look, my father just used to walk me around the room on his back, and he turned around and got vicious and said, my father played this game with me and it was fun. Right? So he defended, this is a fun game, my father played it with me. Right? Now at this point, I'm sleep deprived with a special needs child, I'm dealing with all these professionals. I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, she does tend to giggle and have fun when she's playing this game with him. Of course, once she disclosed, you know, my brain blew a circuit because I realised it was a grooming game. Now, we're talking about an individual who's been offending since his son was born in 1972, who gives the child sherry, so he must have to calculate the body mass index to make sure that the three-year-old is not alcohol poisoned, to stupefy them, to give them enough to feel dizzy, and then the child is taught to be sexualized in a way to be croquettish, and it's very much like the John Bernay Ramsey case, where you get these parents who put their child into these pageants and adultify them. But this is behind closed doors at an isolated holiday home without the makeup and the tutu, okay? So what we're doing, it's learned behaviour for the child that's under the age of five. When they get older and they take their first drink, the computer program runs, they act out and debase themselves, okay? So this is somebody who's calculating giving small children alcohol to make them pliable, if you like, and then teaching them a grooming game of, you flirt for me. Now, I'll give you an example. This woman in this family who I trusted, who I worked for the Every Child Counts campaign for, she'd ring me up and say, oh, you know, my brother had a bunch of ugly old judges around for dinner, and his four-year-old got up on the judge's table, took all her clothes off, and did an exotic strip dance. And I went, why didn't he throw a towel around her, get her off the table and realise there's something really wrong with that? She said, oh no, he thought it was hilarious. And I said, what is wrong with you that you would not think there was something terribly wrong with your four-year-old getting up on a dining table in front of a bunch of ugly old men, taking her clothes off and doing an exotic lap dance? I said, come on. She said, I know it's disgusting, and I'm, you know, because they were all dysfunctional. They were all about competing to have tea with the Queen on the lawn. And she hated him because he dismissed her little medal as any little sausage can get a medal. I create law in New Zealand. You know, this, they're all very, the clinical term is called enmeshed for a family, sibling rivalry that goes right through to the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, where they never get together to talk about the Iraq War or their garden. They're all in this room talking about each other, crucifying each other, putting each other down, and then they all get back together in unison when there's someone like me comes along that can threaten to expose a lot of them. They all start getting all over each other like a rash and all form together, and then they come apart again. It's very dysfunctional. So what we have is the sexualization of children at a very young age. And if it's not corrected through the systems and therapy, we have all these children that get on alcohol, and it's a real problem in New Zealand, as we know. Alcohol, Australia, Brits, I think New Zealand's the second for it, British are first. We're worse than the Aussies with all the drinking and the violence and the promiscuity. And we have a high rate of child abuse in this country, which is all adding to that, because if they don't get the proper psychological counselling, which I did, but it got wiped by this family, they don't get the cognitive therapy for the actual physical abuse, then the minute they take that drink or a drug when they're 18, that is set up in the neural pathway from under the age of five. That neural pathway is set up, they act out. It's called acting out. Okay? So somebody needs to address this horrible topic, I know, but we need more people speaking out about this, because what's happening is you're setting up the society to fail. And with all the technology young people have now too, they're getting dumped over text. It's not like when I was growing up, you actually had to go around, knock on the door and deal with it face to face. They're just, you know, people are just turfed out the door and stuff. So getting back to that, there were all these grooming games evidence on the tapes. So this is what they were trying to extract from my state house. this was the agenda was, as I got further down the line, I did not know that this woman was taking her children's organisation into the United States to get in pursuit of a Congressional Medal for Children. And she decided, got to get those tapes. You know, otherwise my whole life's work is, you know, gone. So we have exotic behaviour. We have grooming games. We have... when I actually got out of the unit and into the family court system, whichever parent files the character assassination lawsuit first, 9 times out of 10, the judges know that it's the offending child abuser. A lot of judges are good judges. They go out on stress leave because they know they have to hand the child over to the person who files first. They more often than not know they're placing the child in harm's way, but they can't do anything about it until the trusted parent gets back with their version. System's so backlogged, your child's in there for 6 months still being harmed while the court so backlogged. So a lot of parents commit suicide. They just can't bear to watch their child suffer. The statistics are so high. If the New Zealand public got hold of these statistics, they'd be descending on the beehive as we speak in large numbers. But they don't go outside of the country to see objectively how shameful our statistics are, right? Mm. Now, what then happens is you're in an adversarial court system where, like the high court system, it is not right for children. The children are committing suicide too. A lot of these good people go to funerals all the time, good people that are working for children and the systems. The judges want the government to, but the government won't pay for a new system. It's too expensive. There are corrupt judges in there. But what you get into is basically a cash cow for family court lawyers. A lot of them, you have to have a certain personality type to defend a murderer or a child abuser, and those personality types are within our family court system. Horror of all horrors. So you've got the psychopathic lawyer defending the psychopath in the family court system, right?
Which the media is not allowed to report on.
Absolutely.
Now, when I learned that, it was like, how exactly can you have any kind of transparent court system if there's no reporting of any kind allowed?
No, and the other thing is their report systems are so contrived and managed that I remember I got hold, a non-government organisation rang me. I said, how the hell did I get you? She said, because the undercover woman in mental health rang me. I rang SIFS 24/7 and badgered them to give me a contract. I harassed them until they gave it in, and they admitted your child had been seriously harmed. She took me on board. She tested my child because he was bringing my child to me behind the court system's back, laughing at me. I got her to this woman. She tested my child. She said the psychological damages the grandparents have set her up to put herself like. I said, what do you mean? She said, after the abuse, she went and got him a glass of water. She's made to feel sorry for him and his illness. She said, if this, think of it as a brain injury. She said, if this is not corrected through psychotherapy, she'll always put herself last. She'll always be attracted to abusive, very charismatic, dangerous personalities. And she's trained to, even though he's bashed me or abused me or psychologically hurt me, I've got to look after him. And the way that is set up is the grandmother was always saying, but you know, Papa provides and he makes up for it for buying expensive gifts. So you're training a 3-year-old who's got, you know, we're all born as an open vessel. Garbage in, garbage out. So they're evilly setting up these personality disorders in these children. It goes a lot deeper than just the actual physical act. We've got, this is why when I was given a paedophile ring expert at one point, who now we're getting trouble to get her to come forward, that's a whole nother radio show, she said what they're doing is they're training, setting up the neural pathways to buy into the system. Love is money. So long as they make up for it at some stage by giving you $10,000 to do what you want to do, than love is money. It's not. So they're setting up these children with all these dysfunctional, and they're setting them up to be victims all their lives and have very painful lives, because this woman unequivocally said to me, think of it as a brain injury, because they've set up the neural pathway in the child's developing brain to perceive the world this way. But but I've got to feel sorry for him because he's got the problem, so I'll look after him. She said, what you need to do is we need to correct this, and we need to correct it before brain development age 10, otherwise it's too late. The first 7 years of a child's life, and the church said, give me the first 7 years and I've got them for life, it's set like fudge. The parenting role model system they see, everything they see goes in. And they've done a really good studies on this in the United States, where they followed these children up at 21. They were acting out for good or for worse. Okay? So that was the psychological side of it. Then I get chucked by this professor. I get given the psychiatrist who greets me. They have all these arrangements. If professor doesn't have to come and see me, then I know something's up. And she was a psychiatrist, right? She said, my other vocation is paedophile ring behavioural expert. She said, I did a similar case in Australia. She said, there was a police, a judge, a husband and wife team, a small baby, and a three-year-old, the same age as your three-year-old, exposed to similar trauma, sexual trauma. I was like, oh my God, I was in tears. I was like a mess on her floor. Somebody who could educate me on how to help my child, right? She's an academic. She starts going into all the horrors of the ramifications, stuff that I found hard to take on board, but I did so. I saw her for 6 months. The only subject was her expertise in this field. I was reporting in about my daughter having horrible flashbacks. She told me, you either get the chemo if you're absent 3 months for an early detect of cancer, getting chemo. In your absence, your child will offer herself up. Where's my mummy? Where's my mummy? She'll cry. She'll offer herself up. She'll be further harmed. You make the choice. Well, what parent wouldn't make the choice to go in and protect your child and shield them from the bullets? So they just used that against me in family court and said, she's a mental case who doesn't care to get the chemo, who doesn't care to be here for her child. The whole family court system re-traumatizes the parent. Everything you say is used against you, like it would be in a high court. Everything you do is twisted and turned around and used against you. And no wonder these parents commit suicide. Men wouldn't have to go in there and be harmed in order to protect their child from being sexually harmed. But women don't have a choice, right?
Mm.
So I went in there. I just took the 6 weeks radiation. I went in there every night to keep the grandparents away because they were breaching court orders, no contact. They were accessing my five-year-old and telling her that I was dying of cancer because she was a bad, evil soul who told on them. When he was dropping her off to me and laughing at me like the Joker of Batman, as soon as he left, my child was having breakdowns. Nana and Barbara have told me that you're dying of cancer before. You know, I could hardly cope, but I did for my child's sake. I went in there 6 weeks. This paedophile ring behaviour expert says to me, you're about to become the first adult I know of globally that's about to become the three-year-old in the room. Your partner is going to go into a psychosis where he acts out on you. He becomes his mother and his father. You're 40. We need that information. Okay? So she knew I was going to go in and shield my child from the bullets. I was really thin. I was shaking. I was really struggling to cope in there. But I went in. I found the courage somewhere. When you have a child and your child's in trouble, you'll find the courage from somewhere. And I had life experience, but I wasn't totally prepared for this. But I went in there without going into gory detail. I got denied water for radiation treatment. This is another thing that a paedophile would deny a child of water over a 48-hour period so they don't wet the bed. A child's only defence when they're that little is to either poo themselves or wet the bed to stop their offender from abusing them. I got treated like the three-year-old. I got denied water for radiation, drinking water for radiation therapy. When I asked him not to harm my radiated side, he would Joker off Batman, alter multiple personalities, psycho head, grin, and then head hurt my radiated side and laugh at me. It was horrible, horrible, traumatic stuff for me to see what these 3-year-olds, 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds are exposed to. It almost sent me off the edge to the point of no return mentally. But I had good people around me in the background who looked on very sad and were just as distressed as I was. This just didn't affect me. The tentacles of the octopus go right out there. You want to make someone suffer, you make them watch somebody they love suffer. Okay? That's how they work it. Because that's tenfold worse. You and I can handle it if it's just us getting hurt. Right? When you start watching them make all the people that you love more than life suffer, that's when you're going to lose your marbles and go insane, right? So they were also always trying to drive me back into mental health. There were times I felt like just going into mental health and sticking my arm out and going, stab me with something to kill the psychological pain I'm experiencing. What I want to get back to is this academic was like, oh, we globally don't have this information, Karen. The last time I saw her, she said to me, if you survive them, if you survive the cancer, we need you to come back and do a case study on the grandmother. And I went, why? She said, because we already know what the paedophile does. He'll emotionally blackmail the child. He'll shame the child and tell the child that they enjoyed it. And if the child's hysterical going, I'm going to tell my mother or I'm going to tell my father, they'll shame the child, you enjoyed it. Now, this is because I found out from this expert, and I had a breakdown in her office. I said, but she can't enjoy it. She's 3. She doesn't have puberty. She doesn't have the plumbing. She said, I'm sorry, Karen. I'm so sorry. Rose. She said, children can experience dry orgasms. And this is how the paedophile shames the child psychologically when they threaten to tell the parent. And all the little child knows is, well, I sort of did enjoy it, but it's horrible. You know, and they're psychologically just killed, emotionally murdered behind closed doors. So these are all the horrors. She said to me, we need to know about her. And I went, why? She said, because without her, he wouldn't get any children. He's an ugly old man. He wouldn't get children for the weekend. She said, we need to know everything about how this woman indoctrined you into the family. You're an intelligent girl. We need to know how she indoctrined you into the family, how she was kind to you, whether she was abusive to you. We need to know everything about their relationship, how they functioned. We need a case study on it. And I said, how will that help you? She said, globally, I don't know of a situation or a case like yours where you have become the 3-year-old in the room and privy to information we've never had before. We've never been able to prosecute the wife because we can't prove whether she's awake or asleep. She said, what you're about to experience, you're going to find out all that information. She said, we can then take that information and now start doing prosecutions globally to prove, well, we've had a case now where this woman's been exposed to how the female is actually party to this, how she procures the children. We need to know what she brought to your door, how she operates with her, well, it's baking and knitting. And when you have your first child, you think everybody's lovely, right? They bring you baking, you get lots of stuff. And she said, we need to know the psychological profile of the predatory enabler at the door. That's always the wife. Why do women do this? Because they're insane. They're jealous of youth and beauty. They're jealous of good people. They enjoy seeing that woman. They're a horrible mother. You're a good mother. They're so insanely jealous. They enjoy handing your child over. Or because in this case, they were Nazis. They were true Aryan, white, racist, very, very, you know, I was brown. But even if you're white, if you're middle class, that'll be enough for them to dismiss you and take your child. This is how they operate mentally. So she wanted, this professional wanted me to, I never got back to her with a case study, right, until recently I offered to, and now she won't come forward. Because the first meeting with this professional, she said, I want you to go into the apartment and offer your partner me and a team of experts so that your daughter has a healthy sex life, love life later on. She had achieved that. She was proud to have achieved that in Australia. The husband was on board. Unlike my situation, the husband was on board. It had been his family. They gave this little girl from age 5 to age 10 the cognitive therapy to correct the biological exotic behaviour when they're tired, They think lovers, if they get tired, they go into exotic behaviour because you're looking after them because they're so tired, okay? I said, I went in, he wouldn't let my daughter get it because it would later on be used as proof that they had offended. He just put into family court that I was a mental case that didn't care to get the, that kept him up all weekend and didn't care to get chemo, etc. So I went back to her and I said, he said no, and I was in tears. And I said, what if I convince him when she's seven? She went, no, Karen, I'm really sorry. It has to be done by brain development level age 10. Otherwise, it's too late. She'll act out when she's 18. End of my sessions with her after 6 months. The last thing this woman said to me is, if you survive them and if you survive cancer, we need you to get back with this woman's psychological profile so we can start prosecuting enablers, the husband and wife team around the world. Now, 10 years later, she won't come forward. Because, why? Because she was thinking about her own... what she was going to get out of this for her larger peer group. She wasn't considering, A, you don't ask a cancer patient to go in, be harmed. You should have been ringing the police, and you should have been talking to SIFs, right? She should have trotted me down to the police station, backed me up, and I would have given her all that been able to give her all that information. But she wanted me to go in and get extra information that I didn't have. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So all these years later, if you've got all this prestige for having been a woman that counselled a similar case in Australia where they went on to monitor their victim, she ended up having a healthy, normal love life, I'd be really proud of myself too. But if you had someone like me and you didn't think about the fact, consider the cancer and go, this isn't going to be good for her immune system, this is going to facilitate, and I don't expect her to be an oncologist, but... you'd never ask somebody, your whole immune system needs to be there for you to fight this disease. If you're already compromised and your child's compromised, your immune system's going to be down, what person in their right mind would ask you to go in and suffer that kind of abuse and trauma when you've got cancer, just so you can get the information for the greater good of the world? So we can disperse this information about the female enabler to parents so they know what the red flags are to look for. The woman next door that turns up on your doorstep all the time. Now, all these years later, if she backs me up about the conversation she had with me, that people are already asking questions, excuse me, she should have been telling SIFs. She should have been telling the police. But no, she wanted. She didn't even consider me and my cancer when you think about it. So, a decade on, she's not going to want to respond. She's not going to want to come forward because all her glory for the case she did years ago in Australia, they're going to say, 10 years, how many children have been harmed since this child spoke up? This woman's got maybe 6 months to live because she's had all this going on for 10 years. And I went back to her in 2011 and said, there's no justice in this world, but if you want that information, I emailed, she wouldn't respond to me. I said, I'm now ready, been given a couple of years, I'm now ready to give you the information you wanted. I'm mentally able to. Back then, when she asked that of me, I couldn't even think about this without losing my mind. But I actually, 8 years down the track, got to a stage where I could go, I'm through the other side, I can logically type this up for the greater good, for her to disperse. Well, silence. Now I realise why. Because she's now being knocked out under the microscope. What's wrong with you? And this is what's wrong with these isolated academics. They're not being watched. A corporate would say, have a meeting with her. She's an isolated psychiatric person, professional. They're going, now hang on a minute, you haven't considered this woman's cancer. Yes, it would be nice to have the information that you wanted to get, but... in reality, you're asking this woman who's already compromised and got cancer and a compromised immune system to go and get raped, have lack of sleep, have tears, stress, high stress and anxiety about her small child, suicidal. Hang on a minute. Where's the balance here? You know? I could understand how she desperately wanted that information.
Have you tried to contact her?
2 years ago I did, she wouldn't respond. Now there's an investigation on, she's silent as.
Mm.
Now I don't know what her arrangement was with the professor, but you know.
May I postulate a theory, wild speculation, that if you were exposing one of the most dangerous criminal groups of pedophile scum with all the power and money and wealth and all of that in the world, don't you think you'd kind of draw some attention that you don't want to have the attention of, and maybe they would shut you up and stop you from doing what you're doing?
Yeah, well, there are a lot of career threats that go on, and initially the police didn't believe me. They said, "Do you really expect me to believe that it's this corrupt?" And I went, "Let me send you all my electronic information over 10 years. Let me." They had private eyes following me when I left 2 years ago. But I've had good people keep documents off property for years, and their houses have been broken into and whatnot. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, at the end of the day, no, the system is set up to protect them all, and there's a lot of career threats go on. As I said to you before, as above, so below, we've got it on a global scale with the NSA. J. Edgar Hoover was actually collecting information and getting politicians in Washington years ago, decades ago. I'll expose this about your niece, right? So it's the same thing here. We've got a professor I met, clean cut, clean shirt, shaven after shave. 3 years later, I go in impromptu. He didn't know I was coming. He's abusing patients. He's feral. He looks like he's been sucking off a bottle of vodka for 3 days. He's hostile to me in the hallway. And that's a clear indication that something's up. Mm. Because I've only met him once or twice to be cleared in family court. 5 years on, I get an investigation going. I find out he wrote a double report. And guess what? I have to take a civil lawsuit out against him. Well, he stopped me from getting a job in the IT industry, so I could take a civil. He's helped shorten my life expectancy by me. 6 years ago, had I been able to get a job, unbeknown that this report was being bandied about, I was a dangerous con woman, I would have been able to get a decent lawyer, extract my child from the situation, get away from my ex-partner, fight the cancer better, be on a good diet because I had money. So he helped, and yet I can't hold him accountable through our legal system, because in New Zealand you've got to have money to do that. It worked for them, having me in a state house, because in 2008, 4 years under the primary care of my ex-partner, sleep deprived, distressed, she tried to step off a ledge and take her life 12 floors up at the apartment. My ex-partner found her just in time, suddenly drops my child to my state house, where my child has a bipolar breakdown, a breakdown no parent should ever have to witness, right? And they, we're going to call the authorities on her. Works for them, marry woman, state house, drop the child down to my place to self-harm, call SIFs on her. And then, of course, the Every Child Counts campaign higher up was doing the double duty on me, going in and backing up her nephew behind my back. So part of the reason my daughter became suicidal at age 8 was we came to love and trust this woman. We spent time with her in a Potiki. We spent a lot of time. I worked for Every Child Counts campaign. I can prove that. She sucked me in because she introduced me briefly to Helen Clark, you know. But then my child turned around and said, "Mum, you can't." After she'd come out of her break, I cleared all my cancer appointments. I was on suicide watch for 4 days, 4 nights. That's not good for me to be up 4 nights when I'm battling cancer, distressed, crying. Okay. After I got my daughter right, he'd always take her back, trot her out to school, and claim the improved behaviour was because of him. So whenever she was having breakdowns at school, they could use the mental health, and that report I didn't know about from Professor. Here, look, it's her that's causing the dysfunction in the child. So you see how they've got their connections in the system? And so my child turns around and she says, "You can't trust her." She got me in a corner a year ago when Daddy was there, when Daddy was out, and said, "I'm really on Nana and Papa's side." That was part of the reason I had a breakdown, Mum. That was part of the reason I'm so petrified. She used 8 years old, petrified of the seniors in that family. She's clawing on the grass. She's screaming the cul-de-sac down. She wants to get a sledgehammer, smash up the front yard. I said, "What do you need, darling?" This attack, suicidal despair, went on for 4 hours until she collapsed in a red-faced, exhausted heap on my bed. Finny. And all I did was see what they did to her when she was three in their isolated holiday home. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And then, very quickly, delivered her back to him, got her right, delivered her back to him. I became very depressed. I felt I was going to release the state house and drop out of society into the city mission. I couldn't go to hospital anymore. I'd found out that this woman had betrayed both me and my daughter. And just as I was about to surrender the state house and drop out of society, I knew my mind would be gone. I knew I couldn't come back once I'd crossed that threshold. Just as I was about to do it, he rang me up and went, quick, get in here. I'd never heard fear in his voice. Quick, find a house for you and Sapphire. I'll pay anything, I'll do it. So I delivered her back, and obviously she was still unstable. So I got her right, but she was back in the isolated situation with her father. So I went, what's wrong? Because I'd never heard him be fearful. He's always been narcissistic, nasty, dysfunctional. Within 2 weeks, we moved back under the same roof. I took a separate bedroom. She was 9 years old. She slept in my bed for the first 6 months. She held counsel with me. I baked like a mad woman, desserts, cookies, birthday cakes, dinner. And suddenly he went, oh, I can just sit back and relax. I had nothing to do with him other than when he got home from work, here's your roast pork and pear and cinnamon sauce, Annabelle Langwine recipe. And I'd go to my room and study. I could not stand, it made me feel physically ill to be in the same room with him. Unfortunately, they're like buddies. That didn't help her, because when you're young, you still love your father no matter what. It's not till you're 20 you look back and go, oh, and that ain't right. The experts have said when she's 20, she'll be in my office, she'll be a mess, right? Fathers have a lot of power and influence over their daughters. So I just, for the last 4 years, I've networked on these kinds of subject matter. I've just studied, because I couldn't get a job and the cancer was advancing. So for the last 4 years, I've just looked after my child, got her stable, and they always see the larger family hasn't seen me for 10 years. They're told I'm some crazy woman that's locked up somewhere and that he's such a good father and da 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 da, right, etc., etc. So the plan was, in 2012, I turned round to my most exceptional 13-year-old daughter. She is her mother's daughter, even though there's a slight personality split. I said, darling, I've only got about 2 years. I said, I've seen you through this phase of your life, and they've threatened to take you again, and you're financially dependent upon them. And I went through a series of conversations after school. What would you do if you were 18 and Mum was no longer around, and this scenario and that scenario? And she said, Mum, I'd rather not be a ticking time bomb. I'd rather get regressed. I thought, wow, that blew me away. You know, because I explained to her, you may have a flashback when you're 30 and you're sleep deprived and you've got a newborn and you could have a breakdown and da-da-da-da-da. These are the things that can happen. What would you do if I'm not here? Brilliant, brilliant kid. Brilliant IQ. Brilliant EQ, CQ, SQ. So I had that conversation with her and I said, I need your permission to publicly Facebook some content of the because you can't just ask to leave this family, right? You got to upset the apple cart. I had to put some of the higher ups on Facebook and out them. You know, you can't ask to leave. You're not going to get supported. And you're being told, you've done your job, we'll pay the rent for the next 3 months, and then we're going to kick you out on the street with nowhere to live, right? And we're going to trot your daughter back out after all these years and go, look at what a wonderful, because she's a wonderful girl because I'm a good parent. She's got some problems, yes, but she presents really well like me, and he's getting all the credit for it, right? So their plan was, this is 8 years later, I start Facebooking this stuff, right? He comes in like the Joker off Batman and says, so easy after 10 years to tell people at my work that you're this big, nasty woman and they all think I'm a wonderful man. I said, yeah, they've never met me. They've been listening to you for 10 years. Would you like pear and cinnamon sauce on your roast pork? Okay, so I'm walking past this room. Oh, it's going down my newsfeed. His uncle, all of them. Truth, public. Facebook the Queen, Facebook Helen Clark, Facebook John Key, who shut me down immediately. Oh, it's going down my newsfeed, and he threatened to file a similar lawsuit that he did in 2004, and your sisters are in on it, and we're going to take you to court like we did, da 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 da. And I said, and then he continued to whinge about the news. I said, if you don't like it, unfriend me, right? I knew they were going to take Sab. She was in tears, I was in tears. It was horrible, right? I knew they were going to take her. They took her, they kidnapped her, they left me sitting in a Gulf Harbour apartment on the marina, no food, no money, no car to get to my monthly life-saving injection in oncology. You're suddenly on a bus, you're stressed out, you're trying to get to wins, you've got lawyers filing against you, you've got the mental health after you again, okay? So they had mental health on to me. The minute they rang, I said, I was cleared in 2005, checked the family court statement. I'm about to walk into the school to find out what's going on with my child. They were so confident they were going to get me resectioned 10 years later, drugged up this time, put away for good, and they had just trot my daughter down to school and say, see, she's the one that's dangerous. Didn't happen. Mental health went into family court behind me to support me. And I'll leave it at that because we're running out of time, but the system worked for me this time round. They checked me out. They said, no, it's just a high stress reaction. We're actually appalled that our services have been used to disparage her character all these years. Normally it takes them a month to pull the records. They said, we're pulling them within 3 days. We're going to go into family court and support you. They looked at the records. They'd seen I'd had this woman who was a paedophile ring expert in 2005. I have not been in their system. I extracted myself from their system, was never on any psychotropic drugs. They realised, looking back, this woman, they've used our profession to totally get away with child abuse. They went into family court behind me. And then we started getting the higher-ups threatening my family court lawyer, and we'll take the food out of your children's mouths. And she's maverick. And she stood up to them and said, go ahead, I'll fight it for free. We don't like bullies. Mm. Okay, and she was shocked that this high up judge and their family is really that corrupt. She actually got threatened. We'll take the food out of your mouth and your children's. They don't need document just because of who they are. They just have to say it and they're believed, and nobody will do business with you. Mm. That's how much pulling power they've got. So here we see the whole gamut of what's going on in New Zealand. I'm not the only case. I'm one of the most shocking cases, and it's to my understanding there's 12 people out there like me. The family court system does not consider your cancer. That's not in the best interest of the child because they're already disturbed that their parents got cancer, let alone if you're the trusted parent and they've been separated from you. So how does that work for the child at the end of the day, Vinny?
It's not supposed to work for the child. It's meant to work for the people that are abusing them, that set up the system and makes the world the way it is. What I found interesting about people who are in these situations is that you have a spectrum of reactions. Some people freeze, some people go backwards, but some people, like yourself, move forwards and fight and bring these scumbags to justice in due course. It's never an easy fight. They make it as hard as humanly possible, which would make me believe that they're not quite human. You know, it's a depressing situation, but you just have to make the best of it. You don't really have much of a choice in the matter, do you? Well, thank you, Rose, for sharing your story with myself and my listeners today. Would you like a hug?
I would love a hug.
All right, well, stand up. I'll give you a hug.
Just remember, every child counts, and we've got to make it count for them. I know it sounds cliche, but children are our future. Yeah. For productivity, for mental health, everything. And this is an ugly topic, but it needs to be addressed. Somebody needs to shout really loud about this on the world stage, not just Bill Maloney in the UK.
Indeed. So, ladies and gentlemen, please share this and just share an anecdote or a story or something of that nature, because cases can indeed change the world. This is the Vinnie Eastwood Show, another episode, Lockdown. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen, and please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and show your financial support for the work that we're doing here. Thank you.